This is Emily Hutchison. Today is November 3rd, 2016. I'm a student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm interviewing Beverly Yelchin.
Yelchin.
This interview is taking place at the 2016 SAF National Convention in Madison, Wisconsin at the Monona Terrace Convention Center. The interview is sponsored by the Society of American Foresters and the University of Wisconsin Oral History Program and is part of the SAF History Project, Oral History Project. Will you tell me your name?
My name's Beverly Yelchin.
And will you spell your last name?
Y-E-L-C-Z-Y-N.
Okay, perfect. To begin, can you tell me the story of how you became a forester?
Sure. I grew up here in Madison, Wisconsin, and my parents, we camped. But I was an urban girl back then. I think the population of Madison was about 177,000. I was a Girl Scout, and the honest truth of how I chose forestry is my senior year in high school, a couple things happened. One, I thought I was going into journalism and I was going to be a writer. I worked on my high school newspaper. I took creative writing, advanced English literature. I was going to go to the University of Eau Claire, Wisconsin-Eau Claire. And a whole bunch of my high school friends were going to Eau Claire. My older sister went to Eau Claire. And to fulfill that college entrance requirement for science, I took advanced biology. And I know today, I didn't realize it at that time, we spent about a six-week module on ecology. We read Sand County Almanac, got introduced to Aldo Leopold, and I loved it. One of my girlfriends had dated a guy 1 year older than us, and Carl Burhop had gone to the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point in forestry. And someone asked me what I was going to major in one day, and I said, forestry. And honestly, I didn't even know really what it was. I didn't have a pair of boots. But it sounded cool, and in the 70s, women weren't doing it. And also, I was at that point in my life, I needed to go somewhere where my high school friends weren't going, none of my family was there. And so I went to the University of Wisconsin and Stevens Point in forestry. But I look back and I think, having a family who did a lot in the outdoors and Girl Scouts were part of that.
Mm-hmm. With the Girl Scouts, did Girl Scouts do a lot of camping?
Yes, and at that time, I think we were the Black Hawk Council. They had a camp outside between Madison and Columbus. Mm-hmm. Camp, I can't remember the name of it. And I went to summer camp, and I can't remember where that was. And we actually backpacked. I think I was in eighth grade, or between seventh and eighth grade. We hiked out into the woods. We made our own shelters.
Oh, wow.
We learned all that. So
when you went to Stevens Point, you majored in forestry right away?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And around my junior year, I figured out that forestry was not ecology. And I calculated the credits I would need to get a major in ecology, and I was burned out. I was ready. So I got my BS in forestry, and you know what? Throughout my career, I have become an ecologist as well as a certified silviculturist, and got that through my career.
Mm-hmm. And so, what was your first job out of college?
So I guess a little bit more of the background of that story is my senior year in high school. the Madison La Follette Ski Club, along with Monona Grove and Memorial, we went skiing out west. We went to Steamboat Springs. I was an avid downhill skier. Every Monday night, we got on a school bus and went to Devil's Head to downhill ski. And I knew I wanted to move out west. So the first job offer I got was a seasonal position as a nature interpretive guide with the Bureau of Reclamation in Central Washington. And that is the semi-arid desert. It's on the east side of the Cascades in Washington. And I biked to, it was at the Pothole State Park. It was wonderful. I took people on nature hikes. I ran the interpretive center and loved it. And so, you know, back then it was 1980, 81. I graduated in December of 80. It was a new administration. The Reagan administration had just come in, and there was a hiring freeze. And I'm a baby boomer. And Stevens Point, there were hundreds of graduates in forestry, wildlife, soils. I think they were cranking out. I think the College of Natural Resources back then was 2,000 students, which was the size of my high school, but just in the CNR. So I moved around seasonally wherever the jobs were. So that summer job, they liked me so much. They kept me on as a civil engineering technician, which mainly I was sampling soils behind a drill rig in the Columbia Basin Irrigation Project in Central Washington. And then I went and worked seasonally for the Forest Service in Avery, Idaho. My first permanent job was with Oregon State University as a research assistant. So I went where the jobs were.
Yeah. So you were a civil engineering technician sampling soil.
Mm-hmm.
And then when did you start, or how did you become a certified silviculturist?
Well, so after OSU, I worked on a specific research project from 1983 to 1986, and that's as the funding was done, and I got picked up by the Forest Service on the Rogue River National Forest in on the Prospect Ranger District as a technician. And about a year and a half after that, the Forest Service had what they had called a conversion roster that you could apply to if you were a technician and you had a four-year degree. And I was able to get a timber sale planning position on the Umpqua National Forest, which is just north of the Rogue River in Oregon, and converted to a professional. So I was a GS6 technician and got a GS7 professional that then automatically got a GS9. That was during the spotted owl controversy, and my district on the Umpqua was selling 140 million board feet of timber, just one district. I think we were hauling like 180 million board feet of timber. And I had met my then husband in Avery, Idaho, and we wanted to get back to Region 1, Northern Idaho, or Montana. A job came open in Sealy Lake, Montana. In fact, I was on a fire in out of Grangeville, Idaho. And when I got home, my husband said, there's an opening in Montana. When I called and asked about the position, and it was in reforestation and timber stand improvement, and it might have been when they offered me the job, I said to them, would you support me in pursuing certification as a silviculturist? And they said yes. and they held me to it, or I held them to it. And so in 1991, back then, each region had their own certification program. Now it's national. It was called CEFAS, the Continuing Education in Forest Ecology. Remember ecology? And silviculture. And it's master's level. You went one module at University of Montana, another module at University or Wazoo, Washington State University, and then University of Idaho. And then you had to defend your prescription with a panel of experts. Hmm. And so in 1992, I did that. I was the first in the region to defend my prescription out in the field. And I attained that certification, and the Forest Service supported me throughout my career. I have changed jobs many different times, but always was able to get the continuing education credits that you need to maintain your certification, as well as write diagnosis and prescriptions. Does that make sense?
I think so. I'm impressed with all the different varieties of roles you've had in forestry. So what's your position now?
Currently, and I've held this position since 2011, I'm a staff officer over implementation. So in the Forest Service hierarchy, at the forest level, the forest supervisor oversees the Lolo National Forest. I work directly for the forest supervisor, and I oversee fire, timber, silviculture, engineering, recreation, range, and weeds.
Wow.
Yeah. But I don't have wildlife and soils and fish and planning, GIS, budget.
And let's see. So how have you been involved with the Society of American Foresters?
Well, the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point had, and I think still does, has a very active SAF student chapter. That's where I learned how to use a chainsaw. We did a pulp cut. Got to network, went to the national convention in Boston. And so whenever I've lived near a town, like with Oregon State University, it was out of Medford, it wasn't Corvallis, I had five bosses that were PhDs, and one of them was, they all were active. And Ole got me to be the delegate at large for the Siskiyou chapter. I was the treasurer of the Siskiyou chapter. I helped with the national convention in Portland in 1984. When I moved to Prospect, I mean, I lived 70 miles from a town. And same in Montana. Sealy Lake is 70 miles from Kalispell, 90 miles from Missoula. I just mainly did the journal, and whenever I had to go into Missoula, I would try and go to the meeting. I have served as the Montana chair. That was in 2012, 2013. When I moved, I did a short stint as a forest silviculturist in Idaho. Me and another guy drove 50 miles from Kamei, Idaho, down to Moscow, Idaho. In 1999, I think it was, or 2000, there was no communications chair at the executive nor chapter level in Montana. So I said, I'll do it. And so I got very engaged, kind of back to my writing with media, making sure that we had media coverage of our events and a newsletter out to the membership. at the national level. I helped plan this convention because it was in my hometown.
Yeah.
And also with the diversity and inclusion track that's occurring, I'm moderating a session and I'm making a presentation. So I've been pretty active.
Yeah, definitely.
SAF, when I got laid off from OSU, I had such an incredible network of people that I met through SAF. I knew I wasn't going to be out of a job very long.
Going to the next question. So how has your ethnicity, cultural background, or gender influenced your career as a forester?
You know, and I'll be talking about this tomorrow, because in 1985 there was a symposium, Women in Natural Resources, Challenges and Strategies in Dallas, Texas, that I was able to go to. And over my career since 1981, I just, maybe it's because I grew up in this city, and biracial relationships, gay, I grew up in a town that was open and inclusive. And I have never experienced, that I know of, discrimination or harassment. I'm a pretty extroverted person, and I'm blonde and I'm Polish. And those kind of things just don't bother me, or I have a high tolerance. You know, when I worked seasonally up on the Nicolaitan College, there was a guy who kind of tried to make it an issue. And the other, our crew boss was a woman who he ended up marrying. And the other guys on my crew were like, "You're a jerk." You know, it seemed that behavior wasn't tolerated. So my gender, how has it influenced my career, is that I don't know that it has. Or maybe as a woman I have made choices of my interests that might not interest a male or a person of color, but...
Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't, because I've been thinking of it and reflecting on it, and I'm not a pioneer. The women, the generation before me, were the pioneers that had to endure a lot, and I know that it's still going on, and I'll be talking about that. The Huffington Post did an article called "Out Here, No One Can Hear You Scream," and what happened in the Grand Canyon National Park, and the superintendent of Yosemite having to retire due to hostile work environment and condoning harassment, which to me is totally unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see it, I name it and say that's just not acceptable. And I have not, as far as I know, experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be just who I am. I don't know.
What was the job that you mentioned in college where you said your crew boss was a woman?
I was, between my sophomore and junior year, I worked as a seasonal on the Nicolet National Forest up north on the timber crew, out of the Lakeview Ranger District. And, you know, then I lived in Wabino, and my roommate, she was a hydrology major at Point. She worked on the Leona District. The forest soil scientist was a woman. This was in 1978, and there were two young women, doing soil surveys. I think they were from Madison. So there were women in the Forest Service So I never, I always, in even in Avery, we lived in a on a mountaintop. We had to start the generator every morning, and there were women on the silviculture crew. There was another woman on the timber crew that I was on. There were two fire crews that from, I think, Champaign or Carbondale, wherever Southern Illinois University is, that there were like four or five women on the fire crew back in the early 80s. So,
and when you were majoring in forestry, did you feel that it was evenly like 50-50?
For the incoming freshman and sophomore, where you're taking those broad introduction to wildlife management, introduction to watershed management or soils, absolutely. There were a ton of women. My roommates, once I moved off campus, three wildlife biologists and one fisheries major. Once I got to upper level courses and we had to go to summer field camp, there were three sessions of Clam Lake at that time. And I was in the third session, and out of, I think, about 110 students, so we're all between our sophomore and junior year, or junior, yeah. Out of 110, there were 10 of us. So 10%.
Okay, next question. What are your thoughts about diversity and inclusion in the forestry profession?
My thoughts are the more diverse we are, the stronger we are. And, you know, if I'm totally honest, that's as long as you think active management is okay. Because there, I have to deal with people that don't believe in the mission of the Forest Service, that are anti-cutting trees, and I struggle with that point of view, that perspective. Mm-hmm. But I know by having those people that that has made me a better silviculturist, a better forester, a better manager to at least listen to their point of view, mm-hmm. And try to understand it, and also to help them understand the national forests are not national parks. We have wilderness within national forests. So it has made me a better person, I think, or it's given me a richer experience.
So I was thinking at first you meant active management of people, not active management of forests.
Active management of forests.
So do you think the forestry profession is welcoming to new ideas?
I think that depends on where you're at. I really do. And I don't know, today's docket of speakers, women were well represented. Some minorities were represented. I have spent 30-some years trying to recruit and retain people of color. And it's difficult, especially where I live in Montana, where the 2010 census, we are still under 1 million people. And that population is like, I think, 90% white, mm-hmm. Caucasian now, and I can't remember what the demographic with women and men. And the next well-represented group is Native American. So, and I guess I should get back to that other question. To me, that diversity is, it's not a label, it's not the color of your skin, it's not your gender, it's your experience growing up, where you came for, from the values you have, you know, whether it's, and really now thinking about it out loud on tape, there were a lot of incoming Vietnam vets into Stevens Point that were coming to school on the GI Bill. And so here are these older people, not the 18-year-old just graduated from high school, that I learned a lot from them. So back to the question.
Yeah, that's good. What does diversity mean? That's really good.
You're from Minnesota? Oh my God, you're a Viking fan, you know? But those are the things, you know, that that interests me, because, like I just said, those labels, those things that we think of equal employment opportunity are not well represented in the northern region of the Forest Service. Mm-hmm. And I know we have tried a whole lot of different things to try and get people of color to come work. And maybe in Missoula, a community of 60,000, it's a little bit easier. But if you're in a remote district, it can be very difficult because they don't have a community that looks like them.
Right. Okay, so then, what role can SAF play in enhancing diversity and inclusion?
Well, I think this convention is a great example where the Forest Service is hiring on the spot 150 either they're in school right now or recent graduates. I think the Wisconsin DNR is also hiring here, and because it's the national convention, we're getting students and representation from the South, because I think that's where the majority of African American foresters come from. And I don't want to sound discriminating, but I'm pretty sure that's the demographic. And also in our outreach to schools, school children, and those types of programs, those are the things of, we need you, Mike Dockery talked about it today, having tribal members at the table. We need your perspective. We need to hear the culture and tradition to be able to be better managers.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned before that you're trying to recruit and retain a diversity. I wonder if there are specific things that were really helpful with that, or specific things you think could be helpful.
Well, so there's a program in the Forest Service. The acronym is MWSI, Multicultural Workforce Initiative. And it's a cooperation with the Haskell School of Indians out of Oklahoma State, I think Mississippi or Alabama State. And there's a bunch of schools. So my story about that is, I needed to recruit a civil culture pathways, it's called now, but student cooperative education. And we went through MWSI, and here I am working in northern Idaho, surrounded by the Nez Perce tribe, and I'm hiring a kid from Oklahoma through the Haskell Indian School. And so I went to the tribal liaison. I said, why isn't the Nez Perce tribe, University of Idaho is adjacent, part of MWSI? And I don't know whatever happened with that. So he came and worked for us, and he was excellent. He was great, and I was so glad to have him. And he ended up quitting the Forest Service because his spouse wanted to be back in Oklahoma, around family. Mm-hmm. out west where there's no cell phone coverage. That is a huge deal. People don't realize it, but here, we're going to put you at Powell Ranger Station on the top of a mountain. You have no cell phone coverage. The nearest town is 50 miles away, and we want you to stay. Another was, we did have two African-American males come from, I think it was Mississippi, to Sealy Lake, and we did everything. We had potlucks and tried to get them engaged in whatever activities we were doing, and being Black in a nearly all-white community was very difficult for them. Mm-hmm. That's what they told us. And I thank them for their honesty. So those are what I do with any new employee. It doesn't matter diversity or not, is I do a facilitated one-day transition meeting with all the peers and subordinates for that new employee to help them transition to the Lolo culture, and have that connection. Ask those kind of questions like, to make that connection. Mm-hmm. I think making that human connection is really important. Mm-hmm. And I think SAF more and more is trying to do that.
Where do you see the profession of forestry going in the next 20 to 100 years?
Wow.
You can choose your time frame.
Well, I'll be retired or dead. With the human population continuing to grow, with the loss of agriculture land to houses, that's deforestation. Cutting trees is not deforestation. I think it'll be more and more important. And that our telling our stories, like my sisters, this is why your forests in your backyard are important. And this is what you can do to maintain healthy ones. That connection with a history student of why forests are important and why managing them is important is the future, along with incorporating those social values. Sometimes cutting trees is ugly for a little bit, but it ensures that those forests will continue into perpetuity for your grandchildren. I didn't have any children, but for my great nieces and nephews and future generations. The future, I was hoping by this time I would have my personal jetpack. So at 58 years old, I can't climb mountains like I used to. I can just zoom around. Look at Google Earth. But you know what? That's only from the top. You can't see the horizontal vision of the forests or the streams or whatever. But I'm sure, when I started out, there were not personal computers. There were mainframe computers that filled this room, and I had to key punch cards to be able to run a computer program. I think technology will help. I think more and more getting kids engaged. I Skyped with my sister's class up in Wausau, and talked about wildland firefighting, which I haven't done for a while. But that connection, me in Missoula, Montana, talking to kids in Wausau, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and the connection is my sister. So how can other foresters make those connections with teachers to be engaged?
Mm-hmm. Were you, how?
The zombie apocalypse. That's what's going to happen.
Hopefully not. The Cubs won, though. That was predicted.
Absolutely.
Let's see.
How are we doing on time?
So we've got about 35 minutes, and we could wrap up in the next five. There's a few questions. I don't think we'll get to all of them, but maybe we can hit what has been the most rewarding aspect of your career.
There have been so many.
Or aspects.
Being able to work outside. I mean, all my career, it's like, wow, I get paid for doing this. Maybe I shouldn't tell people that. And the people, just the incredible knowledge, caring, passion of people for their resources, as well as the human community. And I think that's really important, that humans are part of the ecosystem. It's not like the forests are out there or the streams and lakes, that we are connected. You know, getting certified as a silviculturist was a big deal. And when I got into this position, I let my certification go for a couple reasons. But one, it's a lot of work. And I told my boss, for me to maintain that certification to my standard, and I have no time during the day, it would be like having a second job. And you know what? I'm too old. I like to do other things besides work. But that was a highlight. I was an ecologist on a forest plan revision team for the Flathead National Forest, the Lolo, and the Bitterroot. And we had an incredible team. That was definitely a highlight. Doing analysis over a 6 million acre landscape and engaging those people on the forests and us going and visiting and looking at and getting connected as we're doing management plans for, who knows, the next 20, 30 years was really great. I just have learned so much. You know, Society of American Forests has, you know, been one of those experiences that I cherish. Again, coming here and hearing new ideas. And some, like one of the speakers who talked about today, that when Aldo Leopold was advocating for wilderness, that SAF wasn't on board with that. That's part of our history, and we need to embrace it, not deny it. What was the question again?
Oh, that most rewarding aspects of your career. But so we can, that.
Well, yeah, so the terrain and the people and just the diversity of the jobs I've been privileged and honored to get. And it's been great.
And then what advice would you give to a student or a new forester just starting off?
My advice is work out in the field as long as you can. Don't get a planning job. And in fact, I've done guest lecturing at the University of Montana about NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, and interdisciplinary teams. And I just tell them, boots on the ground, get out there and observe and experience the natural world or the managed world, make those connections and network. Ask for help. If I don't know something, you know, earlier in my career, I did not do that as much as I wish I had. I pretended I knew stuff that I didn't, so I didn't look bad. And that was a mistake. And it takes a level of sophistication and humility to admit, I don't know, and I need help. I'd also say learn from your mistakes. Don't try and cover them up. Learn from them. 'Cause that's what I've had to do.
Okay, so that is about the end of the questions, unless there's anything else you'd like to add about forestry, the SAF, or diversity that we didn't cover.
Yeah, it's the end of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot that I've had the privilege of experience, and one was that that has really changed, that I think for the Forest Service is cherishing those people that have decided to stay in place. In the old days, it was like if you wanted a promotion, you needed to move every 3 to 5 years. And I think more and more having that local historical knowledge has become an asset. And I was fortunate. I have worked on the Lolo National Forest since 1989. I did go to the Clearwater for 3 years as a silviculturist and 1 year to the Bitterroot. And to get promoted twice without having to move was incredible. And I'm glad that, you know, that we have changed our minds about you need new blood, which is good. Mm-hmm. And there are times on some districts on my forest, it's like, they've been there too long. We need new blood. So there's a balance mm-hmm. there. And I think also it definitely has changed in that balance of personal life and work life. That has changed 180 degrees from when I started. That more and more we emphasize taking care of ourselves. 'Cause if we're not healthy, our workplace is not healthy either. Mm-hmm. So that's all I can think of.
And then just a few demographic questions for sure. Their records. What year were you born?
1958.
And what is your gender?
Female.
What is your ethnic, racial, or cultural background?
White.
Perfect.
Polish.
thank you for your participation in this project.
Well, thank you.
I'm